Our gospel reading is from John chapter 21, verses 15 to 19. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, "Follow me." This is the witness of the good news of Jesus Christ. Thanks be to God. Sometimes my kids have profound questions. Sometimes they have weird questions, like how many molecules are in a dog's butt. But sometimes they have very profound questions. Like the other morning, our 8-year-old Isaiah stopped me in my tracks with this one. "Daddy, why don't more people go to church?" "That's a really good question," I said, which was true, but also a stalling tactic. And so I took a deep breath and told him that people get to make up their own minds about what they do with their time. Some people decide to go to church or other places of worship. Others decide not to, and others don't even think about church. And that's okay. But Mama and Daddy think church is pretty important. We think that it's important to learn about God and to talk about Jesus and to work together to be helpful and kind. It's important to be around other people that are different but still love and support each other. It's important to be around other people like you who ask really good questions, just like you. Well, that seemed to satisfy him, and he went off to do something else. But I've continued to think about it, and I've been reflecting not so much on what I said but what I didn't say. I didn't talk about the failures of the church, and I sure didn't tell him about the heartbreakingly high number of people that have told me that they don't feel worthy to come to church, that they don't measure up in some way, that there's some standard that they don't meet because of what they have done or not done. And even those of us that are part of a faith community can sometimes feel like we don't measure up, like we aren't giving enough or doing enough. In a big and complex place like Metropolitan United Church, where we deal with big and complex issues, it always feels like we could or should be doing more, producing more. More programs, more projects, more outreach, more time, more talents, more treasure, more. And if we don't do it, it feels like we've let the side down, like we aren't measuring up. And I realize how this sounds on our Stewardship Sunday, where we are, in fact, asking you to do more. But on this Stewardship Sunday, we must be brave enough to also speak about the harmful effects of guilt. We must be wary of the harmful effects of building a culture based not on joyful service, but on grudging obligation, on setting impossible standards that make people feel bad about themselves if they don't measure up. And to be honest, there are times in the Gospels where we see Jesus setting impossible standards. Consider Matthew 16. "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." Luke 14. "If anyone does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple." And from our John reading this morning, he says to Peter, "Someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not want to go." At first pass, this sounds like the loss of personal agency, loss of meaningful connections, loss of freedom. "Sorry, Jesus, but if that is what you were selling, I'm not buying. And if that is what the church is offering, we may as well just close the doors and turn off the lights." But consider this. On that day, Jesus built a fire by the sea and cooked some fish on some coals. When they had finished eating, he said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." Two more times, Jesus asked Peter if he loves him. And with growing agitation, Peter says, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." To which Jesus repeats, "Feed my sheep." This is a remarkably intimate exchange between Jesus and Peter. It seems to be a call for Peter to carry on Jesus' work after he's gone, and it is, but it is also something else. It is a moment of reconciliation, of forgiveness. You see, the threefold questioning, "Do you love me?" is an echo to Peter's earlier threefold denial of Jesus. Around another fire in the city of Jerusalem, on the night that Jesus was seized, a fearful and agitated Peter repeatedly cries out, "I do not know the man. I don't know him. I'm not his disciple." And then the cock crowed, and Peter broke down and wept bitter tears, for he knew what he had done. He had pledged himself to Jesus, promised to follow where he would lead. But when things got hard, he faltered and he failed. He lost faith and turned his back on Jesus. But now, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" There is no anger in Jesus, only acceptance of Peter, faults and failures and all. "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" No shame, just the gift of starting again. "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" No guilt, just the freedom to make a choice. And when Peter makes his choice, when he turns back towards Jesus, the fire flickering in his eyes, Jesus says, "Good. Now go feed my sheep." Love, not guilt, not obligation, not shame, but love is the basis of the Christian call to service. Love is the only qualification. It is the only standard we must meet. Love, says Jesus, is what is needed to feed the hungry world. You see, whenever Jesus uses food metaphors, he is always talking about more than food. When he says, "Feed my sheep," the food he is talking about is nothing less than himself and the nourishment he brings. "I am the bread of life," he says. "Whoever comes to me shall not hunger." The food that Jesus speaks of is not something we need to manufacture or produce. It's nothing we need to worry about running out of. It's not a standard we have to meet. As with Peter around the charcoal fire, Christ is the nourishment and the strength for a troubled world. He brings forgiveness and acceptance into a world starving for both. Jesus gives the call to feed, and he provides the food. One evening, a couple of weeks ago, I was walking home from church, and I was lost in my thoughts. And as I made the turn onto the Danforth, I started seeing people stopped on the other side of the sidewalk looking in the opposite direction. At first, I didn't pay much notice, but then I saw more and more people stopping and turning around. And then I noticed a glow on their faces, red and orange, like the flicker of a campfire. And some of them were smiling and some were taking pictures. I wanted to know what they saw. It was irresistible. And so I too stopped and turned around, and I saw the most fantastic sunset, deep folds of clouds, afire with light and color. Standing there on a busy Toronto sidewalk, it became clear to me that this is what church needs to be. Just as Peter did not have to provide the food, we do not have to produce the light. God provides the light. If we try to produce the light, it will be hubris. It will be a standard we cannot reach, and we will fail. God provides the light. God provides the light, and our call as a people of faith is to be the ones who stop and turn and bear witness to the light, to stop the normal flow of busyness and commerce and bear witness to the light of God. And like the people on the sidewalk, when we stop and look, others will want to stop too. When they see the flicker in our eyes, they will want to see what we see. I feel blessed to be in ministry here. Every day I get to see the love of God reflecting off the faces of this community. Every day I get to see the faith lived out in the remarkable volunteer contributions of the people of this church. Karen, Pat, myself, and the staff see how much you put into your church, and not out of grudging obligation, but out of joy. We see it. We see how your generosity has enabled us to provide thousands of meals for our most vulnerable neighbors in this time of COVID. We see your compassion in the reaching out to each other and holding each other in prayer. We see your participation in arts and music and our justice work. We see your continued presence in our worship services here in the building and online. The life of faith and the community we seek to build here is not built on guilt. It is built on freedom. It is built on the freedom to choose, to stop the normal routines of life, and make conscious decisions, faith-filled choices about how to spend time and money. Love, not guilt, not shame, not obligation, but love is the basis of Christian service. With this freeing knowledge, we can put down those feelings about not measuring up. We don't have to be the light. Our role is to stop and orient our lives towards the light of God. And when we do this, others will take notice. They will see the choices we make with our time and talent and treasure and the meaning and nourishment those choices bring to our lives. They will see the flicker in our eyes. They will want to see what we see. It will, I pray, be irresistible. May it be so. Amen.